Dranger, everybody, and welcome to the RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 4 Recap here on Reality TV or Hapbox. My name is Mike Bloom, here with my own super group to break down all of the love, hate, and everything in between going on in this episode of RuPaul's Drag Race 4. Let me welcome in my crew to break it all down. First off, let's welcome in Brent Wolgamott. Brent, how are you?
Oh, how you doing?
Please tell me you were doing the white girl running man like Farrah did while you were doing that.
Yes, I was listening. I actually got to listen to about 5 minutes of another recap before we came on, and my friend Maddie Rance said that pheromone, there was no rhythm in her nation.
Oh boy, yeah. Manila was trying to channel a Jackson, but it looks like Farrah might have tried to and failed more properly. But we have a lot to talk about with Farrah. First, let me welcome back to the podcast as well, Liana Boris. Liana, are you gooped and gagged?
Oh my gosh, girl. I got my white girl twerk on, just like Farrah, just like Brent, and I am ready to go.
There's a lot of stuff to get into in this episode. We've got another supersized 90-minute episode. I guess they're all going to be 90 minutes. I'm not entirely sure. I know that season 10 went that route, and maybe All-Stars 4 is replicating it, but it's a supersized episode for super girl groups. I forgot to mention this last week, so I want to say it now before I forget it once more before we get into everything. Do either one of you two have an opinion about either A, the superhero theme, or B, the fact that we have yet to see any sort of foreshadowing post-elimination about a queen coming back?
Well, the superhero theme was really just for that first segment in the very first episode, right? Like, I don't remember if in this episode we got any sort of superhero-themed callbacks, because I know when they show the pictures of the three queens that are in the Hall of Fame, this time they were just their, you know, promo pictures from the before the season, I think.
Yeah, or am I also wrong? On the runway, though, RuPaul's song that plays during the runways this season is the She's a Super Queen, you know, that one. And then that's how the outro for the episode is that as well. I do take your point, Mike, that was advertised a little bit going into the season. I don't know if there is, I was kind of waiting for the synergy between that and maybe like what's happening at Netflix with the super drag stuff that's happening. Maybe there is no connection there. I don't know. But it seemed odd that it happened at the same time. So I take your point with the confusion.
What about the second point I mentioned about, how there's not been anybody. To the superhero point, you know, nobody has grabbed a cape and put it around Jasmine and Pheromone to whisk them away to the Fortress of Solitude until they come back in the game. Do we think that means that we might not actually see a returning queen on this season?
Go ahead, Leanna.
I don't know. Well, that's definitely what I thought. So I thought that's what was going to happen with the superhero theme is that instead of the Blessed Be Kitty Girl, we'll now have somebody come back. You know, maybe it's going to be the three queens from the Hall of Fame and then, yeah, maybe save them. But the fact that we haven't seen it makes me think we're not going to see a returning queen, but we've seen it every season, you know, so it's like hard to believe that they wouldn't do it for All-Stars 4.
Yeah, I don't really have a strong opinion on this. I'm kind of the opinion that they want to keep us guessing, and thus they may not do something this season, but they've done one every season, so... Yeah. Or well, actually, they didn't during the first All-Stars, did they? They didn't bring anybody back.
They couldn't afford to bring anybody back.
They were also building the plane as they flew.
Yeah, that's true.
Unlike Superman in All-Stars 1, so maybe they just sort of forgot about it after the fact. So, yeah, I mean, I think... I'm going to say, like, I will not unexpect it, but I'll be intrigued to see how they pull it off, because usually they're tying it into a theme. They've yet to do so far. That's just something I wanted to mention, sort of tangential, so I don't forget it. Let's get into this episode, because there is a lot to tuck into. I just want to touch briefly upon the post-Jasmine elimination sequence, particularly Trinity getting a bit bend de la creme here by talking about getting a bit surprisingly emotional, saying how, you know, how hard it was to end up cutting somebody. You know, it prompts a bit of an eye roll from Manila, Monet talking about how, you know, you can buy friends with the money that you win. Brent, did you have any opinions about Trinity's reaction to eliminating Jasmine?
Yeah, this is the first time that I was actually eye rolling myself at Trinity Taylor, Trinity the Tuck. I was with Monet on this one, and I'm not always with Monet, but I was like, yeah, I'm kind of with you. Like, you need to get over it, girl. And I'm not really buying it anyway. Trinity is there for business. Like, let it be known that Trinity the Tuck is there for business. And I don't really think that she even shed one tear about eliminating anybody. I think she probably just didn't want to have to be the one to do it, but she wanted the $10,000. And like Monet said, you can always buy friends. So,
Well, she didn't shed a tear because she's probably Botoxed her tear ducts.
Yeah, that too.
Like, I just imagine she's physically not able to. Yeah, it felt a little bit theatrics also. Like, this is... It's like somebody who knows this is what they're supposed to do. Like, I'm supposed to feel bad that I'm eliminating somebody, but deep down, you know that she really doesn't. So, you know, whatever. I was definitely in the eye roll category as well.
So let's jump to the next day. There is one thing I want to point out. I mean, Valentina, well, there's going to be a lot to say about her in this episode, but I'm so obsessed with these little random, obviously stagey things that she does, but it sort of like circles around to being so stagey, it actually comes off as oddly endearing. Like her workroom entrances, for instance. We see in this one, she is decked out in like leather on her arms and legs with a black leotard and keeps meowing even when she's picked for the team. Later on, she's going to do like the Cocoa Beach Chanel look on the elimination day. I can't really put my finger on like how Valentina is behaving. I mean, I guess it's this idea of her being a telenovela star that I feel like of all the queens, she is the one who acknowledges the most that she's on a TV show, and she's going to, you know, really play up the fact that there was a camera in front of her face. Liana, do you agree with that?
Well, with the leather outfit, that was her really trying to do the superhero look. She was going for Catwoman, obviously, trying to help the producers tie all of this back together. it's fun. It's silly. It's, I don't know, yeah, if it's her just trying to put on a show or be the telenovela star that Trinity thinks she is. But yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's light. It's fun. It's Drag Race.
Exactly. It's Drag Race. It's Valentina. I mean, come on. Like, I think there's a time in every young gay boy's life when you wake up every day and every day you have to be a star. And you're like looking at what you have to wear going, girl, what can I wear today? I mean, I went through this when I was like 18 to 20. There was a time in my life where I was like, you know what? Every day is a day to be a star. And let's wake up and let's lay the house down. Like, let's do it. And that's the stage that Valentina's in. You can see people like Latrice just skipping into the workroom going, girl, bye. But, you know, like, Valentina, on the other hand, she is living for herself. And I am kind of living with her. I agree with you, Mike, that it's very endearing. It would be very easy for people to look at this and go, God, I can't wait to get rid of Valentina. But even someone who's as heartless as Gia Gunn was standing behind her, like waiting for her to finish her entrance and just like laughing with her. Like, it was so fucking cool.
And I love the fact that every time I feel like Rue either says her name or the camera cuts her, like even when Rue's explaining the challenge, you cut to Valentina and she's like voguing, like she's posing for the cover of the magazines that she's been on. I can only imagine being there in person and standing next to someone who is constantly preening and posing all the time. It's so much fun to watch. And yes, I can understand, like you said, Brent, maybe people being perturbed with the staginess of it all. But considering just how silly and fun Drag Race can be, I'm personally here for it.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yes, me too. As much fun as we can have. That's the thing. Like, I think that Valentina is sort of living for the fact that she's on All Stars, whereas people like Latrice and Manila are like, we already been on All Stars, girl.
Yeah, Latrice and Manila have very interesting, they are basically the audience surrogates this episode, where all the shenanigans that are going on, they're like, good God, is this what Drag Race has become? Like, back in the day, we had some, you know, some nasty shit going on, but we did not get to this level. But let's move on here as Rue comes in and introduces the Maxi Challenge. They are going to be forming two groups, write your own lyrics and record vocals for a super group called Henny. Before we introduce the guest of honor, we do a schoolyard pick between the two captains, Monique and Trinity, to determine their teams. Team 1, Trinity, Valentina, Latrice, Manila, Gia Gunn. Team 2, Monique, Monet Exchange, Naomi Smalls, and of course, Pheromone. Gia ends up actually going unpicked. Liana, any thoughts about this schoolyard pick or the teams at large?
No, I mean, I think it pretty much followed everybody's draft order. For those who participate in drafts this season, Gia and Farrah being last, I think was a surprise to no one. I think these are two really solid, fun teams.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that Monique was probably picking for the people that she liked personally, not trying to win. I don't know how Manila was left till second to next to last. Like, I guess there's 9 queens and you're like, I guess, and I guess you could say her performance in this episode probably warranted it. But on the other hand, I was like, I can't believe no one's picked Manila yet.
I mean, I think that there's the clear, I don't know, for me, like, there's sort of a clear top 7. Maybe Monique is a little lower, but I think it kind of makes sense to me at least.
Yeah, and I understand your point, Leon, about like Monique picking people that I think she gelled well with, because I think that you know, we'll talk about the performances later, but you could tell that when it came to the performative aspects, Monique, Monet, and Naomi all seem very comfortable both in that choreography style and with each other. And I think between picking Farrah and Gia, you know, she sort of picked, in a way, speaking the lesser of two evils. And I know Gia was surprised to be picked last, but if you remember back to her performance in that Rusical challenge in season six, I mean, we get the return of the needling bee noise that Valentina is talking about later. She is not exactly the strongest singer, so I think the last pick would be understandable, though maybe it sort of fuels the fire that she ends up bringing to the rest of this episode. But this is these are not the only people that they will be performing with as we bring in, this was alluded to in the preview for next week, special guests, Stacey Lane Matthews, and we totally get like a Regina George-esque series of confessionals where everyone is freaking out about Stacey Lane Matthews and her mimetic qualities, Liana.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I was expecting someone to, you know, then say, she punched me in the face. It was awesome. Yeah, it was interesting to have Stacey Lane Matthews back. I think just jumping ahead a little bit, it would have been nice to maybe see more of her. There were some times I forgot that she was there. But it was definitely, it was a lot of fun. It was a kind of, I mean, if you're not with sort of deep within the drag community, I almost feel like it's really random. You know, you'd be like, wait, why Stacey Lane Matthews? Like, who is this person? You know, she was on season three. So, but, you know, regardless, it was still really fun to see Stacey Lane Matthews back.
Yeah, I would have liked to seen her there as a guest judge for the runway, maybe. She could have just at least been there to have some fun and maybe not even judge, but just, like, sit on the panel and, like, give her take on things. I thought she was probably used appropriately enough. I think by one of the teams better than the other team. However, I think we got plenty of her. I mean, she was basically there as a conduit for the audience during the rehearsals and during the rehearsals. That's when she was talking. So I think that was probably good enough for me. And I got some shit to say about those rehearsals.
I mean, I actually agree with Liana. It feels weird that Ru was like, okay, make sure you utilize her. And I feel like Ru maybe should have told that to the show as well, considering that, like, you know, she had those Lizzo choruses that she would bring out. And she was involved a bit in the choreography. But other than that, I do feel like maybe if she had, I don't know, given some input to the judges about what it was like being in the rehearsal room. Because I know that happens sometimes, right? Like when you have Todrick in, you know, with the queens practicing their vocals, or when Michelle and Carson and Ross are sitting in the director's chairs, you know, looking in the queens' takes before they do their final cut whenever they do something in front of the camera. I feel like that rehearsal process is important, especially from an interpersonal perspective. And I also think that, like you said, you know, if Stacey Lane Matthews is not necessarily a household name, it was really fun to see her. I don't know how much more of a household name she became from this episode, considering that she was sort of like, hey, here's someone who comes out and, you know, the queens will do their verses and show themselves off. And then Stacey Lane Matthews will take front and center and sing a couple of choruses and then that'll be it.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. It was just like, you know, I even when she was singing the chorus, which I think was supposed to be focused on her. I mean, obviously, they wanted to show the other queens because this is a challenge for them. And so it's important for the viewers to be able to, you know, see what the actual contestants are doing. So, yeah, it was interesting. It was interesting. Also, I thought with featuring her talents, I didn't know what that meant. I was hoping for something more, but I guess I'll take the lip syncing.
You guys, I just have to tell you that my life just got infinitely better. I am so excited. Like, seriously, as we're doing this, like, we're recording this, like, at 9 a.m. And if you know anything about me, bitch, I don't want to be up at 9 a.m. But we're here because freaking Liana has shit. She got a life. That's why she's like Melissa. She has a life. And so I'm here at 9 a.m. recording this shit. And normally I would be watching figure skating, right? It's the Russian Nationals right now. And because you're recording this, like, so early, I cannot watch the Russian Nationals pairs free skate. And there's a team that I'm absolutely obsessed with. And they had to skate clean, right? Like, the team that they are rivals with totally skated clean. So they had to skate clean. And they just did it. My friend Cecile updated me. I am living right now. Yes, bitch.
What the hell are you talking about?
I just wanted to tell you that I'm so excited right now. Like, I was like, bitch, like, I can't watch it because I'm recording the RuPaul's Drag Race podcast because of Liana. Like, I was literally bitching to her about it, Liana. But then I was like, oh my God, seriously, I can't even believe this just happened. Like, oh, I'm here for it. So we can talk about Stacey Lane Matthews now if you want.
Why is this my fault? Mike had to record early too.
Oh, really? Okay. Oh, I thought it was a Liana.
Nope, it was all Liana. Liana, I'm sorry. It's all about Liana. Liana making everything about her. All right, let's get into this before Brent gets his eyes distracted by Pear's figure skating drama once more. So we get into the team sort of sussing out their own lyrics, and we'll get into more of that as we sort of break down each queen's performance. But let's get to what I feel like is the core tenet of this episode, which is the drama between Gia Gunn and Pheromone. I want to actually just ask at the top here as to what our general feelings were about Gia in this episode, because it's obviously very polarizing. I personally feel like, and I don't know how much of a hot take this is, but from a drama perspective, as much as there may be accusations of her maybe playing this up for the camera, I'm here for the villainy. I'm here for the admitted villainy. I know. Yes. I might get some disagreements here, but I mean, this is, you know, what people were complaining about with things like season 9 or other times when, like, there weren't necessarily people that were here to be like, yeah, I don't care. I might get hate on social media, but, like, this is who I am as a person and I'm here for it. And it was so, again, there were some laugh-worthy moments when it came to stuff, especially when Gia and Farrah actually got into it, you know, when they were doing makeup before the runway. But I mean, Gia is just such a fun level of extra with her bitchiness that I really enjoyed her this episode, just as a TV character. Maybe not as a person to be... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, if Gia Gunn wasn't here, I don't know what the hell we'd be talking about. Like, seriously, everyone there is so professional, and they so want it, and they so are worried about their reputations and what the fans think. Honey, Gia Gunn, she don't give a fuck. She don't give a fuck about shit. She don't give a fuck. So that is what I love about her, all right? She is just living her best life out there, stirring the pot. I wouldn't be surprised, honestly. And I would, like, I don't know if I'd be on board with it, but I would get it. If the producer said to her, you know what? You ain't got no chance in hell to win. Rue's never going to pick you as the winner of the season. But we're going to pay you. And when we tell you to stir the pot, girl, you stir the pot. Farrah's about to be eliminated. Gia, you better get over there real quick. Gia, time to go, bitch. Time to go.
I like this idea that she has an earpiece.
Yes, she's the mole. That's what it is. It wasn't BB Zahara Bonet. It is freaking Gia Gunn. She is the mole. I have discovered it, Liana. By the way, I can't believe how much time you and I spent on that theory last season.
I still believe it in my heart of hearts, okay?
We have to wait for the RuPaul's Drag Race oral history, emphasis on oral, to determine, like, what happened to BB.
We just assumed it was true. That's how believable it was. Oh my God.
It has to be true. It just has to be.
You think she changed her mind in midstream? She was like, you know what? I think you were the mole, but I think I want you to compete now. I think that's what happened.
I'm sure that's what happened. Oh my God. But to talk about Gia, I love that she's so unapologetic too. She's just going to go do her messiness. And I love when, for me, the theme was like, oh, I want to go fix my relationship, and then goes and is like, well, I hear you're the weakest link. How is that fixing your relationship? It's lovely. It's absolutely lovely. And I know that she's starting to get a lot of hate on social media, but I think that's the thing that the two of you were talking about, is that she is entertaining. I mean, it's so much fun to watch her. She's bringing so much drama, and I'm really happy that she's still here, because I was concerned for a brief moment that she was going to go home, and I was like, we can't lose Gia yet.
But I also will, and we'll talk about this later when Farrah actually gets into it, I'll also commend Pheromone as well. I think Farrah came off, despite, you know, maybe her lackluster performance on the main stage, I think actually Gia Gunn, whether intentionally or unintentionally, sort of lifted the reputation of Pheromone, in that Monique wanted to see that fight in her. She showed it in that brief glimpse in the deliberation last week, and she showed her fight this episode as well, with Gia showing that, like, you know what, I'm not going to back down and just be apologetic and supplicate myself to you. She's gonna bite back. She's going to clap back at her. And I think that people really admired that, myself included.
I admire it. I love the fact that Farrah clapped back. And I also love the fact that Monique clapped back as well. Like, it would have been so easy for her to just sit on the side and let it happen, because it didn't involve her. And Farrah was clapping back on her own. Didn't really involve Monique. But I think there's so many people on social media who I'm guessing were living for Monique Hart coming up in there and say, bitch, get on out of here. Like, seriously, stop coming at her. Stop trying to mess up our zhuzh. Stop trying to get in our grill. Like, girl, bye. I was living for Monique Hart in that moment.
Also, I think there are just so many great lines from these altercations. Like when Farrah said something about, I think it's opportunistic. And Gia's like, we'll call it what you will. She's like, opportunistic. That was really lovely. Oh, and then when Manila Luzon had that confessional about not picking on the weakest one. If you've learned anything from prison, you don't go in and pick on the weakest one.
She's like, I learned that in my season. Really, it doesn't work. I love, by the way, I just want to say quickly, the editors, they love themselves some Manila Luzon, honey. Have you seen how many times they cut to her face whenever Rue does something or says something or like they're being directed to do something or react to something? Every single time they go to Manila Luzon with her snaps and her looks and her wide eyes and her smiles and her laughs, everything's about Manila, and I'm living for the editor's choices on these.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's because, you know, Manila is a good go-to person. Again, we sort of talked about how, you know, her and Latrice have been around the block a few times when it comes to Drag Race, so she knows how to produce reactions. It was also a very pertinent episode for her because, you know, obviously she freaked out with Stacey being there, considering that she was on the same season as her. So it was a very near and dear season, our guest artist in residence close to her heart. I want to start with the basic rumblings of the Gia Farrah drama, where Gia decides to maybe derail the brainstorming conversations of Team Trinity by bringing up, like, hey, did you know that Farrah and I had drama before this season? And Latrice, and I think everyone out there, said, no, I had no idea. What the hell are we talking about? Liana, can you try to summarize exactly what this drama was?
Sounds like some high school bullshit to me.
Trinity had it right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, from the way I understand it, essentially, there was another person, a third unnamed person. Let's call her Henny. And Gia and Farrah tried to, like, bring this person to where Gia was working. And Farrah and this other person were both drunk, tried to, like, patch up the relationship. And Gia didn't appreciate it and yelled at the two of them. So that's as far as I mean, that's as much as I know, because I also didn't realize that they had drama. And this happened apparently 6 months before the filming of All Stars 4. It's news to me.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on. I couldn't even discern who did what and what the issue was and what Gia was mad about. Like, it literally could have been like she borrowed a wig and she didn't return it. Like, I don't know what was happening here. I'm with you, Mike. Latrice, like, no, I had no idea. Like, like, tell us about it. But on the other hand, Trinity the Tuck being like, yeah, this sounds like some high school bullshit. I just need, but by the Trinity is all of us. Everything she does, I think, is just like, that's exactly what I'm thinking in that moment. And I'm just like rolling my eyes at her, like, girl, please, come on, let's go. Moving along. Like, everything about Trinity is what I'm thinking.
It was Team Trinity, too, and she's super competitive. So, like, I can just see her seething while this bullshit is going on with Gia just completely hijacking the meeting to talk about something that happened 6 months ago. It's, like, not important.
Exactly. And Trinity, the talk, like, she's pageant queen. She's not afraid to throw down if she needs to throw down. But she's going to throw down on something that's meaningful. She's going to get it out of the way. Like, buck up and shut up. Like, she's going to, like, get it done and get it over with, because she's got shit to do. She's too freaking competitive and too freaking motivated in life to deal with this kind of bullshit.
I love how, you know, Gia basically frames it like, you know, I wish you had gotten rid of, kind of wish you had gotten rid of Farrah, because I don't want to distract me from my performance. Like, Gia, come on. Again, like, it's sort of like what Manila's referring to of, like, don't shake the weak person. Like, is Farrah's performance and presence in Drag Race really distracting you that much from what you're putting out there on the main stage? I don't know. I'm calling shade. Fakeasfuck.com.
Yep.
All right, well, let's get to some rehearsal here. I want to get your general opinions. Surprisingly, no Todrick here in the makeshift vocal studio on the main stage. Instead, we get the pairing of Leland and Freddie Scott. Rue touts their resume. They said they've worked with artists like Troye Sivan and Selena Gomez. Liana, any thoughts about these two working with the queens on their individual verses?
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were fun. I don't think there was anything that, like, really stood out to me about the two of them, but I remember not disliking them, so I think that that's a good start.
Yeah, I think they seemed a little bit more approachable than Todrick. I don't know. I felt like Todrick's always a little stuffy up there. And look, maybe I'll get some pushback from people who are listening to this podcast. Like, Brent, you don't know what you're talking about. Fine. But that's just the way I kind of read him sometimes. Like, he's sort of above it all. Whereas I feel like, and I don't know who the guy was who was doing the recording. Is that Leland or is that Freddie Scott?
I believe that's Freddie. Freddie Scott was the one who was at the computer, and then Leland was the one who was sort of doing the vocal coaching.
Okay, the guy that, so who was it then? Sorry, Freddie Scott was the one doing the vocal coaching?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Freddie was fun. He was fun. He was approachable. He was somebody that you could talk to, and he kept it real with the Queens. Like, it wasn't like he was above them. He seemed to me like someone who was on their level, who was trying to help them. But if they were doing bad, he was like, girl, that's bad. Like, let's try that again. That's really terrible.
And
I always feel like Todrick has like pre-prepared lines to say for like when stuff goes wrong.
And I also, like, I mean, Leland was real with them. He seemed encouraging, though, to sort of, like, get into the Queen's heads as to, like, what are you trying to do here? But he did have some moments, like, when he, rated Manila Luzon's performance a 3.5 on a scale of 1 to 10. So I think that it really struck that nice balance. Had some musicality to him as well, like when Monique was really struggling with that one phrase and Leland just sang it back to her in one fell swoop.
By the way, I love it when you are somebody who's like, you're going to finish somebody else's sentence and you finish their sentence and they're like, that's totally not what I was going to say. Like, because he's like, I was going to put that at, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm going to put that at, she's like, yeah, I know, a 4.5 or so. He's like, I was thinking 3.
And Leland had some really fun things too, like saying Monet was basically embodying the third sister act rap movie with her rapping. We have some other fun moments, like Pheromone saying her vocal experience was doing a sex phone hotline, which I can't tell if that was a joke or not. I usually can't tell with Farrah whether she's sincere.
I think it's real.
It's real, Mike. The shit that I've seen in my life, that is real. That she got a job doing that. There's guys that go for that, obviously. Yeah, there's a market, honey. She's getting coin.
Oh boy, Liana, do you have any other highlights from these brief recording sessions? We'll go more into like the individual lyrics later on, but anything specific that you gleaned from these sessions with these guys?
No, I mean, I thought it was fun. You know, you are sort of set up with, oh, okay, who we think is going to potentially do well and who's maybe not going to do so well. Obviously, you know, with the Manila 3.5 rating, it was like, okay, I'll watch out for her not doing well in the challenge. And then, you know, with Monet and her rap, that was so much fun. Farrah's phone sex, obviously amazing. I think the highlight for me, though, was probably the callback to season 6. I don't know if it was intentional, but when Valentina said that Gia sounded like this, like, bee humming noise that just gets in your head and won't go away. Reminiscent of, you know, we are the comedy queens line that she did from season 6. So loved it.
Yeah, again, that there's a reason why she was picked last or not picked at all, just because of that line alone, which again is just burned in the recesses of my memory and will always be.
Exactly.
So it's a tale of two stories here. That sounds redundant as hell. But a tale of two stories as we get into choreography with Stacey Lane Matthews. Again, with the lack of Todrick, it seems like the queens themselves are set to choreograph their own pieces, which we see occasionally when they used to do like the big top four challenge. I remember they used to do that a bit. And of course, there's always drama, you know, fraught within there. If we start with Team Monique, seems like Farrah just is not getting it, and it is getting on Monique's last nerve. Brent, what did you think about the way Team Monique was going through their choreography?
I mean, I thought they were doing okay. I mean, like, I didn't really have any thoughts on the rehearsals for either one of these, other than I think that Farrah probably is in the bottom based on what they're telling me, like the foreshadowing of it. I never really caught that Monique was in the bottom because remember early in the episode when she pulled out the lipstick, she said that, you know, Farrah, I was going to send you home because you were crying. And then it wasn't like when you said, I really want to be here, this isn't my time to go, that it really threw me back to my season on season 10, where I knew it wasn't my time to go. And if somebody had the grace to show me, or if somebody had the opportunity to show me grace at the time, I certainly would have appreciated that. But I never really connected that to, she's going to need some grace here in about 40 minutes when she's in the bottom too.
Yeah, I didn't either. I thought it was going to be like a Gia versus Farrah kind of deal with, you know, maybe Manila is that third person, but then ends up being safe. That's what I thought it was going to be. Just because I thought we were sort of building up to this fight. I mean, turns out that we were building up to a Gia and Farrah fight. It just turns out they weren't the ones in the bottom.
And I guess, you know, Team Trinity actually had more trouble in choreography than I thought. And it did seem like, as Stacey Lane Matthews put it, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen, Henny, where I think they were all just sort of arguing about the choreography. Granted, when we get to the actual final product, theirs was much cleaner and crisper. So I guess the ends did justify the means there. But or the queens, but I guess it's sort of like all the strong personalities. Just put someone like Gia up against someone like Trinity. We saw that earlier with her sort of bringing the conversation back to her. I think it was only natural that they would sort of devolve as to, should we twirl here? Should we walk here? What should we do?
I actually had some thoughts on some of the looks during the group choreo scene. I didn't really write down much about the dancing, but Boy Manila in a skirt, I loved it. It was this little red flowy skirt. So cute. Gia had this race jumpsuit thing on, which was amazing. And Trinity looked like Steve Irwin with the hat, shirt, and boots. Just saying.
I wish Trinity had worn that, like, delicious black and white studded jacket that she was wearing during, like, the first day in the workroom this episode to the rehearsals, because I just wanted all of that.
With the fringe, it reminded me very Asia O'Hara.
Oh, yes, the fringe, yes. Thank you for reminding me about that. It didn't click with me when you said that jacket, but then I was like, oh, yeah, the fringe. After the fringe, bitch, I'm living for the fringe.
It was on the fringe of your thoughts. That's why you had reach back to remember it. All right, let's get to the next day. I'm so excited to get to the next day.
Yes, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the meat of the bone, Mike.
Yes, we need to get to the meat of this conversation. So Gia approaches, let's talk about the series of events here, and then we can sort of get into it. Gia approaches Monique and, like, sort of does the polite thing and be like, oh yeah, how are you doing? How'd your rehearsals go? P.S. is Farrah the weak link on your team, essentially. And after some arm twisting, Monique's able to sort of say, like, yeah, I mean, Farrah was a little tough on the choreography. And so Gia says, you know what? I want closure with Farrah, so I'm going to go up to her and tell her that she is the weakest link on her team. And what happens afterwards is one of my favorite fights that I can remember in recent Drag Race memory. Just so many fantastic lines, both from both sides, from both Gia and Farrah. Brent, give me some of your general reactions and highlights from this conversation.
Well, I mean, as I said, like, I honestly really do believe that Gia Gunn was like, oh shit, Farrah might go home, or I might go home, and then I'll never get any airtime. So I love the fact that Farrah called out the, you know, well, some of us don't need to manufacture things that happen on the show. I can't remember what she said. Manufacture circumstances.
Some of us don't have to force storylines to get
storylines, yes, exactly, in order to get airtime, which to me was the biggest shade of the year at Gia Gunn. Like, that, like, basically, you're calling her a fake bitch. That's what you're doing. I was here for it because I do think that Gia was a fake bitch. On the other hand, I'm living for what she's serving. So, again, if Gia wasn't here, what are we going to talk about? I mean, for real, let's just assume, let's go to the universe where Gia Gunn is not here. What are they going to talk about? What are they going to put on our television? I don't know. Everyone else is just, I guess, Monique. Monique keeps it real. I don't know. I know why she's here. In fact, I am not falling for it. She will not be eliminated next week, Miss Gia Gunn. No siree bop. She's going to be here till at least episode 4.
They need the drama.
Yes.
It's definitely one of those things where it's like, I wouldn't say, you know, hey, kids, behave like Gia. Like, I understand it's bad behavior, but I still want it on my television because it's exciting, you know? And I think also just the whole logic of, yeah, I want to squash the drama, and then going and telling her she's the weakest, like that's the way to approach it. And then I was so impressed with Pheromone. I think she gets a bad rap for, you know, maybe not being the smartest, right? A lot of the reads were about her, but those clapbacks were so good, especially definitely the one that you guys were talking about with the, I don't have to manufacture my storylines for airtime. Yeah. That was just so great.
And granted, like, admittedly, Farrah might not be, I think it was, you know, good reaction. Maybe not coming from the most logical place. I mean, she was sort of saying in confessionals, like, I think Gia's trying to get under my skin because she sees me as a threat. And it's like, maybe not, Farrah. I love you to death, but maybe not. But I think she absolutely, like, showed herself right there. She stood up to her. She called her, you know, opportunistic. She also sort of shrugged off the whole incident that Gia was centering this argument around, being like, this had no impact on my life, so I don't really care about it. And basically showing, like, Gia, you're being petty for bringing this small thing that, yes, may have broken down our friendship, but you're bringing this into the competition when we don't necessarily need it. I love Farrah saying, Gia, go get ready. And Gia's like, I'm already ready. And then Gia sort of having the last line in the conversation by being like, oh, so you can't multitask, when Farrah's like, I need to go, I need to do my makeup.
By the way, I was like, I totally took offense to that line because I cannot multitask either. Like, I cannot.
Yeah, same.
Like, I if I'm doing something and somebody asks me, well, can't you do two things at once? No. No, I cannot. I want to do something well. And so I'm going to concentrate on this and then I'll get to the other thing. I was totally with her on that.
Oh, boy. Any other things we want to say about this fight? Because we're going to get, again, an epilogue to it when she decides to crash the Farrah's deliberation one-on-one meeting.
Oh, my God.
To try to finish things off. But anything else we want to say about the argument at the makeup chairs?
Again, I'm here for Monique getting involved in it. I'm glad she did. I think she won a few fans for sticking up for Farrah there. Farrah held her own. I'm glad she didn't go out as a total wimp during her last episode. Gia was fun. She was the villain. She knows what she's there. Like, basically, I know this sounds terrible, but even though it was a fight, I think everybody came out looking a little bit more better. I don't know what the... I'm looking for a word to describe Gia Gunn without giving her a compliment, but saying that yet she improved her lot in life as far as RuPaul's Drag Race goes. More better is probably it.
More better.
Yeah, more better.
Well, let's get to the main stage here and talk about our performances and our runway as well. First, let me get into our guest judges for this episode. Two musical artists, understandably, for this challenge. Sierra and Kacey Musgraves. Leon,
who?
I guess, I had heard her name before. I think it was probably, maybe she was an SNL musical guest at one point in the past couple of years, and that's how I remember her name. But Liana, did you have an opinion about either one of these ladies?
Yeah, okay, so I do know who Kacey Musgraves is. I have some of her songs. She's a country music artist. And she's lovely. I mean, she seemed like fun, but I love Sierra. So it was a little bit, it was like, Sierra! And then, oh, okay, and Kacey's there too. I kind of felt bad for her. And I think even, it was Monet at the end of the episode where she was like, Sierra, I love you, and then Kacey just like claps and then like puts her hands down.
Yeah, I think you represent all of the Drag Race audience and going like, Sierra, and who?
Yeah, though, I mean, if they had brought on, maybe Stacey Lane Matthews professed her love to Kacey Musgraves, maybe she has that sort of Southern contingent going on, that maybe just the queens that were on were not necessarily in her demo. You have people like Monet, and you have a Naomi being like, I memorized all the lyrics to your songs, and Kacey Musgraves is like, great, all right, let's move on, please, and stop talking about Sierra.
Yeah, although I could totally see little Naomi teaching everybody the lyrics to 1-2-Step. I love it. Oh, it's so good. I love it.
If only she was in the top and they did a lip sync to 1-2-Step. Are you surprised, by the way, that they did not do a lip sync to either a Kacey Musgraves nor a Sierra song, considering they were both there?
I like the drama of them putting up another Ariana Grande song for the fact that Valentina was in the top two, since that was the one she screwed up last time in Greedy.
Part of me wonders if they were going to do, oh yeah, okay, we'll do one of their songs. And then when they saw Valentino was probably going to be in the top two, it was like, let's change it to an
Plan B, Plan B, Plan V.
Plan B, yeah.
All right, well, let's get into these songs. I want to talk about them on the whole, because I got to say, I loved both of these songs.
Me too. I'm so glad to hear you say that, because honestly, once they were done, this is one of those things that I was like, I hope that RuPaul's Drag Race puts this out on iTunes, because I would totally buy it, or a Spotify or whatever. Like, I've bought things off of iTunes before that RuPaul's Drag Race has put out that the contestants have done, like the season 9 finale where the queens wrote their own lyrics. Like, I've listened to that thing over like 100 times in my car. So this was something where I was like, you know what, that's kind of catchy, and I was here for it.
Yeah, I thought they were a lot of fun too. I think I preferred Maybe Everybody Say Love.
Oh,
maybe just the beginning. I don't know. The Don't Fuck It Up, though, I think, because of the really cohesive choreography, like, I'm just thinking about Latrice's rap and then the, like, pointing thing that they did. I just loved that so much. I thought that these were both a ton of fun.
Yeah, I liked, I think, if we're talking about the songs themselves, Everybody Say Love was fun, but maybe, like, a bit too fast-paced for me. I did like the beginning when they were doing, like, the box steps and everything, and then the weird, like, single ladies choreography. But I guess I Don't Funk It Up. That was the chorus that got stuck in my head a bit more with the Don't Funk It Up if you gotta funk it. And then I loved during those raps, like the weird, the really weird but really fun, like triplet thing that you had Latrice and Trinity doing with their raps, like the da 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 during the pointing tip that you were talking about, Liana.
Yeah.
There was some interesting rhythmic stuff going on. And to your point, I do think if we're talking about choreography, as shady as Gia was, I think she was accurate in her confessional. I think as much as Team Trinity was arguing, their choreography was solid, succinct, and just very clean across the board in comparison.
Yeah, on the other hand, I feel like that Team Monique did a better job of integrating Stacey and Lane Matthews into their performance. I mean, to me, the Trinity Taylor of it all group, they basically sent Stacey Lane Matthews to the back during all of their shit and then brought her out. It honestly reminded me of Marky Mark when he, like, this is like aging myself, but 30 years ago when he did a song called Good Vibrations, and he had a girl called Lolita Holloway as the, you know, she was the also she's on this track person. It was supposed to feature Stacey Lane Matthews, and I don't feel like this is one of those times where they better be glad that they weren't judged as groups, because I felt like that Monique's group did such a better job integrating Stacey Lane into the performance. Again, Trinity Taylor's group, they just sent her to the back or sent her to like behind everybody, and then they brought her back up during the chorus. Whereas Monique Heart and her group, they integrated Stacey Lane into every aspect of their verse, where she was also the star of the show. And I was really kind of bummed that that didn't get more credit.
So this is definitely the Don't Fuck It Up, Funk It Up performance was definitely where I forgot that Henny was there.
Yes, and that's the problem.
Like after, yeah, exactly. Okay, afterwards I was like, oh, right. Yeah, that was supposed to be part of the challenge. But I think ultimately for me, like putting that aside, I thought their performance was way better just in terms of the cohesiveness of the choreography, because I felt that the Everybody Say Love group was, it was messy. Although nobody had cohesive outfits. I was so mad about that. The Don't Fuck It Up group, it was, okay, Gia and Manila and Trinity all kind of look similar with their sort of robotic futuristic jumpsuits. And then you have Valentina in something completely different. And Latrice is in a jumpsuit with her own, like, name on it.
So, by the way, Ken, I just want to say that I think it's so apropos. This is when you know the universe is watching. On the week that Penny Marshall died, who was the star of Laverne and Shirley, I love the fact that Latrice is out there in an outfit with the iconic L on the chest, or, you know, on the breast, on what would be her left hand side, because it totally reminded me of Penny Marshall on Laverne and Shirley. Like, I watched that show in reruns when I was growing up, and then Latrice comes out there in an outfit with the same letter L on her chest. Of course, I know it stands for Latrice, not for Laverne, but still, it was very, very fun. By the way, Latrice across the board, honey, life has been good to you. You looked great during this entire episode.
Oh, boy. Category is Haas and Pfeffer Incorporated. Don't Funk It Up. It's interesting in that they also seem to be, they tried to go for a theming with their lyrics that I don't think Everybody Said Love went for. And actually, it might have worked to the detriment of some people. Like, I feel like someone like Manila might have actually suffered from having more generic lyrics because they wanted to go for this uplifting message, with the exception of Valentina, who just sort of went off and did her own thing and everyone was totally fine with it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, speaking of Valentina, did you guys catch they blurred Valentina's nipples?
Yes, I think in both the lip sync and I believe in this song as well.
Really?
Yeah, I have to go back and watch that.
Wow.
Is that okay? And so the question was, is this progressive or regressive? Because it's still gendered male versus female, but they think that she's a woman. Like, it was very interesting. I was like, why are you going to go blur her nipples?
Well, I believe Stacey Lane Matthews brought down the TV level of viewership when it came to this, because she said, you know, during the rehearsals, like, oh, don't want my titty to get out. And the censors were like, oh, that's a good idea. Standards and practices. No titties better be coming out this episode.
On high alert. Titty alert.
Alert, alert. All right. Well, let's get into each of these performances, and we will pair discussion of their performance during their respective songs with their looks on the runway. Category is Eloquence After Dark, so everyone gets an opportunity to look nice and pretty. Let's start with someone who, again, was the focus of this episode in one way or another, Gia Gunn. I'll admit here, Brent, I am a bit surprised Gia was not at least in the bottom three. Do you agree?
Oh, boy. I think Manila totally deserved it. In fact, I thought Manila should have been in the bottom two. I think her runway saved her. So Manila and Monique and Farrah. So who would we take out? I guess we take out Monique. Maybe Monique was the one who didn't really, because I thought her runway was great, and I thought her singing was great. I thought her lip sync was great. And she had a little, it was a little messy choreography, but I still got a lot of enjoyment out of it. Mm-hmm. So I take your point. Like, here's the thing. If Gia Gunn is safe, she's barely safe. If she's not, then I think Monique probably deserved to be safe because, to me, it was close, but you know, that's why RuPaul's there. She gets to make the decisions.
Yeah, I mean, it's different when we're not there, but definitely watching the episode, I liked what Monique had done, although I could tell from the editing I was not supposed to like what Monique had done.
Right, so, I don't like that when that happens.
Yeah, because I was like, oh, I thought that this was fun. And then, you know, not to jump too far ahead, but when she talked back to the judges, all of that, you know, may have put her in the bottom. But to get back
yeah,
to Gia.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that didn't help. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I could definitely have seen Gia in the bottom three. You know, I think that there was nothing about her performance that particularly stood out to me. I mean, she didn't royally mess it up, so like that was good. It was solid from that perspective, and I did like her runway look. It was a little Barbie for me, but I loved the mermaid cut of the dress, and the pink looks gorgeous on her, so I thought that the runway look definitely also fit the theme, which I thought was lovely.
Yeah, I think that's the problem, Mike, is that Gia, while maybe a little bit small and boring at times, she didn't screw anything up. There were no problems with any of her performance. On the other hand, when you look at Monique and Monilla and Farrah, you could point to each of them and go, okay, this wasn't working. You had a problem with this. And so that's probably where Rue came down on.
Yeah, so I will give her major kudos for the look. If we're talking about the proportionizing of it all, I'm actually looking at, like, I paused the episode on, like, her profile, and her ass is very clearly cut into that dress. Like, she might have had to squeeze herself into that because it's so fitting for her size. And I do love that sort of billowing out in the bottom that you were talking about and the pink on pink of it all. I guess sort of my frustration with her comes from the performance, where I think the lyric, I put the T in the LGB, is a really fun one. Everything else just kind of seemed generic, you know? Like, everything else was kind of boring, except for when she threw shade towards her own teammates by calling them ugly hags.
Yeah, that was great. Is she calling us ugly hags?
I know, right? Latrice, like, she's talking about me?
Yeah. Yeah, so but other than that, though, it was just like, you know, hey, believe in yourself. You can do it. And then she takes her skirt off, and that's essentially it. I know it's a tough job to be the first performer, and this could be a case like Manila that her runway saved her a bit. But I'll admit, I was not entirely impressed by her lyrics specifically. Her performance was fine, but the lyrics were not necessarily up to snuff, especially compared with the people who went right after her.
Yeah, I think RuPaul likes the tizziness of it all, that the queens are like probably seething that Gia wasn't in the bottom three again. Mm-hmm. Like, really? I mean, I know she didn't deserve to be in the bottom three last week, but you know there's a pecking order with these queens. You know that they have ideas about who they want to be at the end and who they think should be at the end and who they think is in the middle and who they think is at the bottom. And I have to believe that until proved otherwise, they probably think that Gia deserves to not be there.
So let's move on here to Latrice, and almost the polar opposite. My opinion is I was a bit surprised that Latrice was not in the top three. I was sufficiently impressed by Latrice in both her verse, her look, and her runway. Liana, what do you think about Latrice's episode?
Yeah, I mean, I think I probably would have swapped out, I don't know, Naomi for Latrice, just because I thought Latrice's verse was a lot of fun. She delivered it so well, and it was really crisp and clean, and that's what I appreciated about it. And she just has, I mean, so much energy on stage, and that's really great to see combined with the good lyrics. And then on top of that, I thought that her runway look was, oh my gosh, it was gorgeous. I mean, it wasn't my top two to the week, we'll get to that, but I thought she looked amazing in it, and it was right.
She looked the best she's ever looked on the runway. She looked fitted and stoned for the gods. Everything about this, the hair was big, the makeup was right, the dress was right. I mean, I just could not have been more happy with Latrice overall. Her performance during the challenge, I thought, warranted her being in the top. Again, I was shocked that she, I'm with you, Mike, I was stunned, actually, that she was not in the top. The judges seemed to be having a blast with her. And although Naomi definitely was fun, and I will give her props for going into a little bit of comedy and making me take a second look at her insofar as a performer goes, I still thought it was, there were elements to it, like her outfit and her runway, that were a bit expected, where I was blown away by Latrice. So that's where I would have broke the tie.
And maybe my expectations were a bit low coming off of Gia's, again, sort of like more boilerplate lyrics. But you have when you have Latrice being like, "God, you're so uptight with the same damn fight. Just know everything's going to be all right." Like you said, Leon, I think the crispness and the speed and confidence that those lyrics were coming out in. And this is also like, if the message is supposed to be inspirational and motivational, like that's Latrice Royale to a T. That's why she is sort of like the requisite Miss Congeniality that everybody goes to. And, you know, she didn't need to move around that much. She just owns that stage, strutting across it with Stacey Lane Matthews. And like you said, the judges were eating it up. I thought she looked absolutely stunning. I thought I recognized the wig. I just looked back at the lookbook. It is, in fact, a wig we saw 2 weeks ago during the Hollis Slay Spectacular. I'm not going to shade Queens for, you know, recycling wigs, considering how hot of a commodity they are. But I actually liked it here better than when she was wearing it with the red and gold in the Hollis Slay Spectacular. This was just a really fantastic look overall.
So good.
All right, well, let's move on here to someone who did not fare so well, at least from a performance perspective. Surprisingly so, you know, Manila comes in and says, you know, she puts out all these albums. She's a very musical person and surprisingly falters here, but more than makes up for it with this freaking gorgeous silver runway from head to toe. Liana, what'd you think about Manila this week?
Oh my God. It's so hard. I like don't even want to talk about her performance because I just want to talk about the runway look because it was just amazing. I mean, jaw dropped when she walked out and I saw her. I mean, not only is the dress gorgeous, fitted right, looks amazing. She's posing the house down and her makeup is beat. It kind of didn't even look like her with the way that she
did look like her.
Yeah. Oh my God. She looked amazing. I want that. I want a doll of this because it's just so amazingly gorgeous. Okay. But the performance was, I agree, a little small, and so I can see why she was in the bottom. Although this runway look, as soon as she walked out, I was like, she's not in the bottom two. Like, there's absolutely no way. Like, she just saved herself.
I don't understand during her performance and during the rehearsals why even her teammates didn't say, like, and why Manila didn't realize, I need to be louder. Like, it was all about volume and excitement and passion. That's what she was lacking in her performance. And then, of course, during the performance of the choreography, it was equal to what she was giving us vocally, which was not much. So I don't understand how she didn't recognize, okay, this is a problem. I need to change it. It seemed like just bashing her head up against the wall, expecting different results when you're doing the same damn thing. And she never really got off that, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, being a 3. Like, I just yell. Like, this is the thing with Queens on RuPaul's Drag Race. If you cannot sing and if you don't think you can do it flawlessly in that moment, just speak it. No one expects you to freaking sing. The people who were in the top, like where Latrice wasn't in the top, but like Naomi and Monet, they were just basically rapping or like were speaking with a rhythm, which is what rapping is, I guess. It was fun. It was light. It was enjoyable. It was funny at different times. If on the other hand you decide to start to sing and you can't do it with any passion or excitement or fun, I just think it's a bad call. I wish she would have changed her mind, but she's probably like, well, I'm a vocalist, so I know I can do this. And I think that's, when you let yourself get into a box like that, I think it's probably problematic. I wish she would have changed strategies midstream and said, you know what, I'm just going to rap it and see how that goes and have fun with it. And just like yell a little bit and get outside my comfort zone. That would have been better, but this was terrible. I will say that the runway, though, there are times in RuPaul's Drag Race history where someone's performance during whatever they were doing warranted them being in the bottom, and they literally saved themselves by virtue of the runway. But I can point to a handful of those times that happening, and in each of those instances, the runway was so effing gag-worthy that it warranted them being saved. And this was one of those times where it was like, holy cow, that was good. I think it's two parts. Number one, it has to be great and stunning and but it has to be unexpected. Like, I expect flawlessness from Manila, but a lot of her stuff is a little kooky and kitschy, and this was one where I was not prepared. I was not prepared for that beat on her face, Liana. Oh, God.
So good.
Yeah. And what I loved about it as well was, like, the way she sold it, too. I mean, they point out that lean.
Yeah.
Like, she's letting
everyone see. How did she get so fishy?
Yeah, she let everyone see every part of those stoned arms that she probably worked so hard to do, including the armpits. Like, maybe she was overcompensating because she knew she maybe didn't deliver in the performance, that she's like, look, I better, like, sell this to the back row of the theater. And she did so, which I totally agree. This is like the, you know, no shade to Cameron Michaels, but I do feel like she maybe did this a couple times as well, maybe saving herself with her awesome runway looks. This was just fantastic. We did see part of that kookiness peek through a bit when she did her classic cross-eyed expression during one part of her verse. But other than that, yeah, this did not seem very Manila-esque, which was surprising. I will say I do like this sort of tracking motif of watching Manila's wigs and figuring out where the blonde streak is going to be. Because this time she wore, like, her hair in the two pigtails that were down, and one of them was blonde, which I thought was really fun. I agree with Michelle, like, why the wedges? You know, is she sort of channeling the Kitty Girls and going for a distinct character? I'm not entirely sure. It didn't necessarily come across, but as a big Manila fan, I mean, she quoted Jungle Kitty this episode. I didn't think I could love her more until she did that.
I mean, I will say that, like, her outfit for the performance challenge, it was so bad. I thought it had been handed to her. Like, I thought that the show had handed her a uniform or something, because I was like, she didn't pick that out, did she? Like, how bad is that?
I do wonder if, to Liana's point, maybe, like, she was sort of commiserating with people like Gia and Trinity, and she's like, oh, yeah, I guess I have this sort of, like, you know, rainbow, you know, neon-looking thing. I guess I can pull it out and put it on. And as a result, it sort of suffered as a result.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. I was like, oh, they're all trying to go for the same theme, so they're kind of having to pull from whatever is maybe the bottom of their suitcases. It may not be the most ideal outfit, but at least it matches everybody else's. And then, no, Valentine isn't something completely different. So that theory just went right out the window.
Before I forget, I actually had gotten a message from the Merle Ginsburg of this podcast, Allie Lasher. I want to go back to Latrice for just one second, because she brought up a point that her friend brought up to her. She said, my dear friend proposed that Drag Race isn't the best vehicle for Latrice Royale. So assuming that, what is the best vehicle for Latrice? So what do we think about this? A, do we think this is the best vehicle for her? And B, assuming that it's not, is there something else that she could do that would make Latrice shine a bit more? Liana, what do you think?
Well, I mean, we've talked about this idea before, where just, you know, a good drag queen doesn't necessarily make a good RuPaul's Drag Race contestant, because they're tested on, you know, very specific things, right? Like doing group choreo and writing their own lyrics, which I guess is a little bit of drag. But in terms of Latrice, this not being the right venue for her, I mean, I don't necessarily think that that's true. I think back to some of the challenges that she excelled at.
Are there better venues for her? I think she does fine on Drag Race, but are there better venues for her? I guess maybe is a better question.
Yeah, sure. A flag twirling competition. I don't know, girl. Like, yeah,
come on.
Pick the thing that she's best at. I don't know. I mean, I think it's hard because what would that other venue be? What are we talking, another reality show?
I have a thought. You know, my partner isn't a huge Drag Race fan, but he does enjoy some of the drag queens on RuPaul's Drag Race, and a few of them just make him light up. And no one makes him light up more than Latrice Royale. Like, when I got him to watch the Christmas special, because I was like, Latrice is on this. He's like, oh, really? Like, Latrice is on? Like, I think Latrice has a warmness about her. She's like almost like Ellen or Oprah. She's very warm and inviting, very motherly. Like they call her mother. I know they call RuPaul mother, but they call Latrice mother on the show. They treat her that way with some respect. And I think like a daytime talk show could work. Yeah. I think that she, like, here's the thing, Liana, and Mike, I think that the world is obviously changing, and things that maybe weren't even possible 5 years ago are totally possible now. I think that Latrice could have a daytime talk show where she comes out beat for the gods every freaking day. It's on, like, you know, Monday through Friday, 3 o'clock. And it's, I don't know, half hour or an hour. And she comes up there and she has guests on, and they're fun and kitschy, and she looks, you know, gorgeous. And I don't know. I think there's a universe where that could work.
That's what I was about to say, is that I think that, because Latrice has a very warm personality, where it's not exactly like the like insane personality of an Alyssa Edwards that would just focus as her own character. She's a great sort of person to just have a conversation with because she's simultaneously supportive, shady, comedic, etc. And so I do feel like I could see her sitting on a couch with somebody and just having a conversation with them, whether it's, you know, celebrities, whether it's normal people looking for, I don't know, inspiration in their lives. I know and at one point an Aja talk show was in the works, but I would sort of pivot from that and maybe put Latrice in that role instead.
Yeah, I think Latrice is the better person because with Latrice, it's not all about Latrice. Latrice is an adult. Like, I was reminded of that watching the preview for next week where she was like, here we go with the romper room fuckery again. Like, mm-hmm. I love me some Latrice because I feel like she's on our level. Like, she's a star, but I also feel like she's on our level. And I feel like that would work really well in a talk show-esque atmosphere. I take, like, everyone, I'm sure everyone is thinking this, well, how the hell are you going to be stoned for the gods at 3 a.m.? Or sorry, 3 p.m. in the middle of the day. I don't know exactly what needs to happen, but I do take Allie and her friend's point that Latrice's talents are not being utilized as good as they can be on RuPaul's Drag Race. That said, she's doing a hell of a job while she's here.
Yeah, making the most of her third opportunity. So I'm excited to see more of her, especially after this week. So let's skip ahead now. Let's go to Trinity the Tuck, team captain, coming off of a bona fide win last week. Ends up safe in the middle here. Liana, what'd you think about Trinity this week?
I thought she deserved to be in the safe category, I think. I mean, I think that her verse was fine. Nothing really stood out to me about it, although I do remember enjoying her performance. I thought that she was charismatic and fun to watch on stage. I really did like her runway look, though. There was one cutout on the side I wished wasn't there, but I was getting Jessica Rabbit vibes. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really pretty, and she did look really eloquent.
she doesn't walk the red carpet. She brings the red carpet to herself.
No, that's Monet. That's Monet.
Oh, is that Monet? Well, Trinity was in red too, wasn't she?
She was, yeah, but she doesn't have the train like Monet.
Oh, okay,
did.
Sorry. I mixed up the quips then, but I know they were both in red. Listen, this outfit was gagging me. I love this outfit. I love, and she was painted right. She was painted very, well, not only say similarly, but there were elements to it that reminded me of her Final Four look when she finally did, like, pageant eleganza on the runway, and she gave us many of those same poses. You know that she has some stock pageant poses in her repertoire for when she is coming out there in something stoned for the gods. So, like, this cutout outfit with the sort of iridescent red, it was very fun for me. And again, I agree with Liana shockingly a lot this episode that her performance in the challenge was fun and I liked it, but I think she was safe because there was just not enough room for her at the top. Like, between the three that were there and Latrice, I just, you know, she wasn't better than them, let's be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that you agree with Liana with everything except her recording times. That's very everybody say love. I think honestly, there were like five queens who all did pretty darn good this episode across the board. And I think Trinity was one of them. And I think, you know, if there was a top five baby, she would have been in it. But I think just by default, she ended up being safe here, which as a super competitive person, I'm not sure if she was particularly happy with. I thought her verse was super solid. Again, she was sort of in the Latrice category of going after somebody whose lyrics weren't necessarily great, didn't necessarily wow, and she also had a bit of the more, like, rapping, you know, percussive words going on. And again, for someone who is prides herself as not being very musical, between last week and this, she's been putting out some pretty aggressive, exciting, energetic vocals of what she's been able to do. This dress, I love. I just love this idea that it's almost like two different patterns divided vertically on her body, where like the right side is all this like sparkly all the way going down to the ground, the other one is sort of like a curtain draped around her body. It's just a really cool representation of her sense of style. So I think very solid job from Trinity so far. She might be one of the, there are a few queens that I feel like have just been consistently steady through the two episodes of this competition, and I feel like Trinity is one of them, which really bodes well for her chances here.
Yeah, I think that she's the front runner. In fact, I'm worried that she's the person they're talking about in the preview of the next episode when they're like, we could take this opportunity to get rid of somebody, because you see Trinity talking about the fact that, well, obviously she's going home. And they're talking about, you know, they're talking about Gia because Trinity can't stand her and they just assume she's going to go home. But I think there's a chance that Trinity could be the person that they are possibly talking about. Again, it's probably misdirection. I can't see Trinity going home right now, but she is, to me, she's the person to beat.
Yeah, I mean, consistently bringing it like that. Yeah. And I'm
never really, having a weakness.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm really happy with her.
Well, let's move on to our final member of group Don't Funk It Up. Someone who, if we're talking about somebody who really impressed, really had an episode. Valentina. She's got, you know, the flowery hydrangea like look for her eloquence. In the main stage, she wears this red Selena-like outfit padded to the gods and ends up bringing out this bilingual verse that everyone is obsessed with, having them shrieking along with her with that high note at the end. Brent, how did you feel about Valentina's performance this week?
This was just otherworldly. This was great. Or otherworldly. What did I say? Otherworldly? I'm sorry. I'm thinking about cows or something. Brown cow, stunning! Oh my god. So look, honestly, I don't know what it is about her. I think it's the way she moves. I think that is what I am so drawn to about Valentina, because her singing was great, her lip sync was great, she was absolutely gorgeous, but yet there's something more there, and I honestly think it's the way she moves. She moves like a star, and yet she moves like a woman. Like, this to me is the illusion of drag. Like, you take somebody who, you know, was not born that way. And of course, Valentina lives her life as a man. And, but yet moves like a woman. She moves like Selena Gomez up there, man. Like, and it's not like it's 90% of the way, and a couple times she clinks a couple things and forgets a move. No, she is just fluid and gorgeous and languid and limber. Everything about this performance to me, and this applies to her lip sync too. I'm like, baby, you're a star. Like, I mean, talk about somebody whose talents are not being used on RuPaul's Drag Race. I mean, I'm happy she's here, but like, she is amazing. So I don't know if I'm alone in that gag worthiness of Valentina, but I'm like. Here's the thing about Valentina. Number one, I'm glad she came back because I wasn't sure she was going to. And then when she did come back, I was like, can she live up to what I thought the Valentina should have been? Because remember, Valentina, I thought she should have won her season, honey. Like, up until she screwed up in that lip sync. And RuPaul, I think, also did too. I think they all thought Valentina was going to win until Valentina forced RuPaul to eliminate her by not knowing the words to the goddamn lip sync. Ah, still so mad about that. So I'm glad she has put that behind her and she is living and being the star that we all know she is.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely has the it factor. Like, you just want to watch her, and I can't take my eyes off of her.
I couldn't either during the lip sync.
Oh my god. It was gorgeous. And okay, I know that she was cast on Rent, but I was very impressed with her singing abilities. Like, I know that there's a reason why.
Well, that's the thing though, is that I totally agree, because I would say that, like, when it comes to these live musical specials, they've gotten better with it, but sometimes they don't cast the best people. Sometimes they cast, you know, names over talent, maybe. So all I meant, I had some trepidation finding out that she was cast as Angel, being like, but can she really sing it? And I think she's proven in two episodes that she can.
Yeah. I mean,
just to be clear about that, what's going on with that? I'm sorry. I know that she was cast in Rent, but I thought it was like on Broadway. So this is like the Christmas Rent special. Did it already air? Did I miss it?
It's airing next month. It's Rent live on Fox. She has been cast as Angel. So yeah, she'll be on TV.
Wow.
Main cable in drag, playing Angel.
Wow. Good for her.
Right. See, she's a star.
She is.
Yeah, I really loved it. The runway look I thought was absolutely gorgeous. Although I will say, personally, I didn't think it fit the theme. I thought it was more like daytime quinceañera, more after dark theme. Although I will say, when RuPaul first said after dark theme, I was like, oh, okay, is this like going to be the hooker challenge? That was what I expected all the looks to be. I was pleasantly surprised it was not. But I mean, she still looked absolutely gorgeous, even though I thought the dress didn't really fit the theme.
Yeah, and it actually reminded me of her lily pad look from like the big hair theme back in season 9. So she just has a thing about flowers, and she truly is in bloom. I mean, there's that one moment, Liana, you keep talking about, like the 2-second clip where Latrice is rapping and it cuts to the other four plus Stacey Lane Matthews doing this like shimmy to the point. And I feel like we didn't see a lot of it, but I feel like maybe one of the reasons Valentina wound up in the top as well is that even when she's not the person who you're focusing on, you're still focusing on her, if that makes sense. Like, she's that theater kid who, like, even if you're in the chorus, if you're one of the dancers, you're still putting energy and putting character into it, that your eyes are inevitably drawn to her. Granted, her color also made her pop a bit more visually. She owned her verse as sort of off kilter as it was, where everyone else was talking about, you know, believe in yourself and you'll do well. And Valentina's basically saying, I love you, don't leave me, which again is a little bit off message. But I think she absolutely just showcased who she was as a talent. And we haven't even gotten to the lip sync yet, which, good God, am I excited to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right. Well, let's move on to our other team here. And I want to start off with Miss Naomi Smalls, who ends up, if we're talking again about consistent performers, she ends up in the top three. And yes, it has been confirmed that Naomi was indeed in the top three last week. She finishes in the top three for the second time here. The judges were very happy. I think Casey Musgrave said she had the best lyrics out of all of them. Liana, what did you think about Naomi this week?
Did I miss some of the lyrics? Or was... I mean, the hung like a baseball bat thing was fun. And
that was really
fun.
That really was. Yeah. I got a laugh out of RuPaul.
Yeah, exactly. And I thought that it was fine. But, you know, I don't know. It didn't stand out to me, I think, in the same way that some of the other queens did, like Latrice, for example. I thought she should have been safe. But obviously, you know, there's something about being in that room with her and seeing her perform that really makes her stand out. So I think that's probably where the judges were coming from.
I think two things happened. I think, number one, her lyrics were really fun. I think that she interacted well with Stacey Lane Matthews. She was one of the people in this group. Yeah. And I said, you know, this is the group I said that interacted much better with Stacey Lane Matthews. She had a blast. And she also has a great sense of timing. Like, she knows when to, like, to look at Stacey Lane Matthews and look at the audience and turn and pose. Everything about it was fully professional, fully realized. Everything about this performance I thought was great. Her runway, on the other hand, I thought was a bit of a snooze and expected. Mm-hmm. Even her outfit during the performance, I thought, again, expected. Like, she came, again, I don't mean to beat, beating a drum for somebody, but, like, she came on to All Stars saying, I want to show that I am not this just posing model girl. And what do you, like, all four outfits that you've shown us are basically, like, legs, 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 legs. Like, that's what you said you wanted to be more than. I guess maybe you can chalk up this performance to that and say, hey, and there was not as much leg shown during the runway, but I would like her to do something that just blows me the F away. Like, I want something, like, it's like the Manila Luzon of it all. I want something unexpected. Like, we never ever see Naomi do kitschy and funny in something where that she wouldn't show her legs. And maybe she's just afraid to do that. I don't know. But I want more from her.
Yeah. And I wonder if on that note, that's the reason why she wound up in the top, is because I do think the lyrics were perhaps unexpectedly witty and funny. You know, I take your point about Mother Tuck and baseball, but I also liked What the Hell is an Appetite. I thought that was, again, if you're talking about like lyrics being on brand and showing who you are, which maybe What is Love, or Everybody Say Love, was focusing on, I feel like Naomi did do that. The outfit, I would say, probably not my favorite of the group, but I did love the sort of cascading into these weird little reflective circles that ended up just filling out the entire skirt. I'll admit, I was a bit surprised to see her in the top three, especially against someone like Latrice, but I thought she really did a solid job. And I know, I personally think that I think Liana and I were both pretty high on her going into the season, and that position maintains for me, where I think, especially since the judges are really enjoying what she's putting out week after week, I actually think she's a good candidate to win at this point.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you guys. Do you think that there's a universe where RuPaul names her as the winner as of All-Stars 4? Like, really? Do you really think that can happen?
I think so. I could see it. I mean, I think that she's getting praise, and that's what I want to see in somebody who's going to ultimately be crowned.
Yeah, I mean, I think in a world where we had someone like Trixie Mattel crash and burn during Snatch Game, but then go on to win an All-Star season, I feel like that sort of opens the door to look at, like, if some of these queens do falter, there's still room for Rue to crown her at the end of the day. And granted, I don't know if Naomi has that topsy-turvy path that Trixie did, but I feel like I could see it at this point. I think she's in it to win it.
By the way, because we never talk about the promos, so I just want to bring it up really quick since you brought up Snatch Game. Next week is Snatch Game, but it's the Snatch Game of Love. And they're having Gus Kentworthy and Keenan Lonsdale, who was, by if you don't know, the younger version of The Flash, on The Flash, right? And I am gagged. I am thirsty for both of them. I don't know if I'll be able to do the podcast next week, so just mop me up.
Yeah, but Brett might be a puddle by next week. And I will say, not to get too ahead of ourselves, I'm so excited for them to change up the Snatch Game format. As much as I love it, I think we have sort of talked about on the podcast how it becomes a thing you look forward to, and sometimes, especially as of late, it doesn't turn out to be a
success. It hasn't been great.
Yeah, it hasn't been a success across the board. So I'm glad that they know that, and they're experimenting with the format. It looks like they're sort of doing a, like, what is it, like, let's make a date type of thing with the Bachelors, and then now they're sort of interacting with these celebrities and asking them questions. So yeah. I'm glad we're changing up the format. That shows a lot of fun.
Yeah, it should be a fun time.
All right, well, let's move on to someone who did not have such a fun time this week, going from the top all the way down to the bottom. Liana, what happened to Monique this week?
What happened to Monique?
I know, right?
This week?
I don't know. I can't answer that question.
I don't know. It's interesting. I sort of feel this is a little bit of the conspiracy theory coming out that Rue is still pissed about the wig being torn off of her head and is like, I'm gonna punish this bitch. I don't know. I mean, again, with the performance, like, I actually thought that the vocal performance was really good. I thought that she crushed it. I get, again, like, the messiness of her critique specifically, although I do think that, like, their whole choreography of that group was a little messy. And, you know, I don't know. It just seemed weird to, like, pick on the jacket specifically. Like, you struggled taking your jacket off, and so that means you deserve to be in the bottom two.
Right. That seemed like weak sauce.
Yeah,
weak
right?
sauce. I didn't understand that either. I don't understand why she was in the bottom. I can't answer that. I guess maybe they ran out of room. Like, I guess you don't want to put Gia Gunn in the bottom because you need your villain around, so fine. You put Manila in the bottom. You put Pheromone in the bottom. So who else are you going to put in the bottom? You can't put Trinity Taylor. She was pretty good. You can't put Latrice. She was really good. Everybody else is in the top. So who's it got to be? Monique. Her vocals weren't great. They were good, but they weren't great. They weren't Valentina-esque. And she had problems, and she didn't look great during the those pants, as Valentina said, were an affront to Aaliyah, and I agree with that. I think the wig was more of a problem. That was the real affront to Aaliyah. But I don't know. I don't understand why she's in the bottom. She just was, and I actually take Liana's point that Rue's pissed about the wig flying off again, as if it didn't fly off before. Like, when it... I guess here's the problem. When it flew off before, I think that everyone was talking about the fact that she didn't know the words. So she never really took that lesson from it. And so she's like, oh, well, the problem was I didn't know the words. No, the problem was you didn't know the words and you took your hair off. That was the problem. You missed the other lesson in school, dear.
Yeah, if you mess with the set, this is how you sort of get punished for it. I mean, I agree with Liana. I mean, maybe it's because, again, I didn't really know Monique as a vocalist coming into this season, but I think she's a super good singer. Granted, you know, Monet might take some umbrage with the fact that Monique declared herself the best singer on the team, but I admire her for the fact that she, like, belted her face off. And I think if you just took the vocal track, it might have been my favorite of the four. But I think if you combine that with the performance between, you know, there is the jacket thing, but even with the jacket thing, like, the choreography is a bit messy. The look itself is a bit messy. Like you said, you mentioned the pants. There's a point where we have another giraffe/brown cow thing where Michelle says, oh, you're doing a TLC thing. And Monique says, oh, no, I'm doing an Aaliyah thing. I just think that speaks volumes as to, like, sometimes Monique goes for ideas that aren't necessarily executed 100%. Again, that's what happened with giraffe and brown cow. That's what happened here with TLC and Aaliyah. Speaking towards her runway look, I loved what she did with the hands and everything. For some reason, I'm never a huge fan of when Monique does a reveal. And here she does this weird reveal where she rips off her top and she's, like, nude underneath with the pasties and everything. I think it was a fun comedic reveal, or at least a way to sort of have the eyes pop. But I don't know if it was necessary, at least from my perspective.
I'm never gonna be mad with the reveal. So I thought this one was actually really cool. I didn't know where the reveal went. Like she pulled the top down, and then I was like, well, where did it go? Did she throw it away?
Then
she
threw it in the rafters.
I know, right? That's the bottom of the dress. I had no idea. So it's a drag. She's a drag queen. She loves herself a good reveal. That's the problem.
I didn't really mind the reveal all that much. I just couldn't stop staring at the gloves, which I thought were way too big. And then I was like, are you trying to be a dragon? Because they were like claws. And so I was a little confused. I did think when she first walked out, I was like, ooh, that top part does not fit her. And then she tore it off and I was like, oh, okay. Like, it's possible. Like, okay. I get it. Okay. That
makes
sense.
There's there's a rationale behind it. Let's move on to someone who occupied Monique, or cohabitant Monique in the bottom two, Miss Pheromone, who was here to prove herself. And I would say, well, I think she did so with her look, which she's always known for. Unfortunately, stuck out like a sore thumb here, Brent, in the Everybody Say Love performance.
Yeah, this was just a miss for me. I mean, she was clearly the weakest out of all nine queens. And worse than that, her runway and her outfit during the performance challenge were weak and expected. And, you know, does she look pretty? Yes, but it's P&P, pretty and predictable. Everything she does, she's like, oh, I'm wearing this ostrich, you know, boa. And I'm like, you wear shit like that all the time. Like, why can't you do something that it blows us the fuck away? Why can't you not wear pink hair? Yes, your hair was styled for the gods, but it's expected, and you've done it every single time. All four times you had a look on this season of Drag Race, and you only had two episodes, you had pink hair and the same shade of pink hair. I don't know. I'm really bummed that she didn't do more. I take, you know, our point from last week that she had a brand and she wanted to run with it, and I get that. But I would have liked for either the outfit during the performance challenge or the runway to be something that was unexpected and made me, you know, take a second look at her and say, Pheromone can do more than pink hair and a fitted outfit and, you know, titties out to here and as much skin showing as possible. Like, there's more than feathers and stones and pink hair for Pheromone, but she never once made me second guess myself.
Yeah, I mean, I think she looked really gorgeous on the runway, and I can see your point, Brent, about it being super repetitive. And I think if you are in her position, you think, okay, there might be a possibility of me going home as the bottom last week. You know, she must have been self-aware enough about her dancing to realize that it was a disaster, you know? So right. You think, like, okay, what can I do to really help myself? Sort of like, I don't know if Manila chose that look on purpose. You know, it's like, okay, maybe I was going to save this for a future week, but I got to use it now because I need to save myself. I was hoping to see something like that, but she did look gorgeous. Like, I'm not gonna put that past her on the runway. The performance, though, it was summed up by the robot shuffle thing that she was doing. Like, that was her performance for me. I couldn't get over it. I was laughing so hard. And then when she's, you know, interacting with Henny, she is interacting sort of, but it seems like even what she was doing was such a great amount of work. You know, and it like wasn't even that much. And it was like, oh, Farrah, she's trying.
Well, yeah, I actually I don't know if this was her decision or Monique's decision or what. I kind of felt bad because she was going in with this total Britney-ism sex pot angle with, you know, the way she was doing the vocals. But for some reason, she was doing all this fast paced choreography. So there was like no time to be sexy, in a manner of speaking. She was too busy. You could see the gears moving in her brain to be like, okay, arm up here, arm down here, step, step, step. When she was doing her performance, that like there was almost a disconnect between the lyrics and what she was doing where, yeah, unfortunately, she did sort of seem like the weakest player here. I mean, you know, we saw that before. I think she wound up in the bottom two during Kardashians, the musical, just because when she was doing those complicated hand games with Valentina, you know, it wasn't necessarily working for her. And look, it's a tough thing to do, and sometimes, you know, she puts out looks and she does amazingly at that, and I'm assuming maybe if she'd had slower, slinkier choreography, she could have sold it more, but here it just was not a match for her.
A robot shuffle! I need to go back and make a gif out of that. It's so bad.
Oh, yeah. I think that the subreddit already has that put on there. It's just, I mean, it's basically like, there's a Step Beyond Drunk Uncle where it's like, I don't know, grandma who means well at the wedding, where she's like, ooh, I'm dancing. I'm getting into Uptown Funk with Bruno Mars. And it's just like, oh, maybe we should sit back down and eat more of those hors d'oeuvres.
She's hip. She's with it.
All right. Finally, we got to finish with a good note here. Monet winds up in the bottom three in a vocal performance last week. She wants to redeem herself. It's an episode about redemption, and she's able to get it here, finishing in the top two and looking, I think, reading between the lines with Ross, the best she's ever looked on Drag Race. Brent, I know you alluded to this before, that you, Monet, might not necessarily always be on the same page, but how did you feel about her this week?
This was the first time in Drag Race history that I was not frustrated with anything that Monet Exchange did. She was like the draft where we picked her number one. I think I picked her number one for a last season of Drag Race. We looked at her and we looked at all the little YouTube videos of stuff that she had done going into Drag Race. And we're like, this queen is going to win it. Hands down, just give her the check. And then she went on there. And she struggled. And every runway was a challenge. This made me so happy. This was the first time I was like, you know what, bitch? You could win this. You could win this. Finally, I'm looking at you not as somebody who is underachieving, but who is overachieving, who is blowing me the fuck away. Everything about this was great. Not only that, I would like to point out the fact that she knew she's a vocalist. Did she sing the performance challenge?
Mm-mm.
No. She wrapped it. She was like, you know what? I'm not even going to bother with that. I know what's going to bring the house down. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to wrap it. I know I can sing this, but I'll be a little self-conscious. You're recording in the studio with people watching. Maybe you just know yourself that that's not going to bring it. So you go to plan B. You say, well, I'm going to wrap this and I'm going to be funny and make people laugh and be really fun and witty. And then on the runway, you're going to give me something that you've never given me before. Never, ever has she given me an outfit that was this fitted and that was this great, monochromatic in a way that I was totally unexpected for someone like Monet. And then having a face that is painted for the gods and hair that wasn't the biggest on the runway, but it was pretty freaking great. It was wonderful. Everything about this was great. I really thought she had a chance to win. I think if the song was a little different, she might have had a chance. But I was so happy for once with Monet. I really was.
I thought her performance was very entertaining. I mean, I think she's just such a charismatic person, and she is such a good performer. I mean, that is why, you know, you drafted her first that year. In terms of her look, though, I will disagree, because I thought that it was an example of the bar was so low for Monet that if she came out in an outfit that looked decent, she was going to get a lot of praise, because I did not like this dress all that much. I didn't like sort of the right shoulder where she has that like little poof thing. I wasn't a huge fan of that. I thought that the material looked cheap. She reminded me of one of those bows that you put on cars when, you know, those like big bows.
In the Christmas commercials?
Yeah, that's the material I thought the dress was made out of. She looked great for Monet. But I feel like that was the thing, was that it was relative to her previous performances on the runway. But she did look great for Monet.
I take your point, though. I may be falling into that trap. But again, everything on Drag Race is about expectations. And I think RuPaul's like myself. I'm like, you know, RuPaul was frustrated with Monet last season. Like, well, I'm sure that RuPaul in her head is like, what the fuck, bitch? Like, seriously, you can't give me a runway? Like, you can't give us a runway? Like, RuPaul wanted to give her a challenge win. There just wasn't an opportunity to do it, because she always screwed up her runways in a way that made it impossible for RuPaul to do so. This time, it was something that, you know what? It was pretty freaking great. So, yeah, I take your point that I may be grading on a little bit of a curve. But, bitch, I'm going to grade on a curve for her, because she made me happy.
And she's all about curve, so I think it makes sense.
Yes.
I mean, speaking towards Monet's performance, I mean, she, like Latrice, I think just sort of owned the fast lyrics. She owned every single word. All she needed was a pair of glasses and a cell phone, and she blew her other teammates out of the water, in my opinion.
She really
did. She's got this, like, you know, we're going to cuddle, she'll start a pillow fight. She mentions that. She says, if you cancel again, I'll call the vixen, and she'll read that ass from 1 to 10.
Thank you for reminding me of that. Yes, I was so glad she had a callback to the vixen. That was so great and so funny. And outside of Naomi saying, you know, like, I'm hung like a mother tucking baseball bat, I think that was probably my favorite lyric of the night.
Yeah, and she was interacting with, you know, Stacey Lane Matthews, the end, doing the Mary-Kate and Ashley back-to-back with talking about self-love. I think she just had a great, you know, sense of lyricism to her, and coupled with this unexpected outfit, puts her in the top two with Valentina. And when they get back into the workroom to sort of deliberate over things, Valentina just sort of wants a moment to sort of live in it. To the point where Monique asks for a one-on-one meeting, and Valentina says, can we just hold for a second, everyone? Because I want everyone to know sort of the pressure I'm feeling having to lip sync, knowing what happened last time.
She needs her telenovela moment.
Yes, I love that they did that with the editing. Like, they could have just had Trinity, or was it Trinity? I can't remember who it was, but it was somebody saying that about Valentina. But the fact that they actually took the time to edit that in with the poses and the music and the lights, everything about that was so funny. I am with you. Like, Valentina just wanted to live in her moment for a little bit. And just she's like, because she knows she has power. She's like, you know what? Because Monique wants to move things along. She's like, bitch, I need to talk to you. But Valentina's like, I just need to take a moment because I wanted to tell you all this. And of course, Monica's like, oh, sure. Yeah. But inside, you know, she's going like, come on, bitch. Like, time is a wasting. Let's go.
Speed it up. Play the music. Yeah. I mean, the editors are having so much fun with Valentina, which again, I think contributes to how much fun I'm having with Valentina to the point where when Valentina said, I want a challenge, they piped in applause from like the sound effects library as she thanks this non-existent audience for clapping.
I love that. So I actually missed that. I need to go back and watch that.
Oh, so good. So we'll I think we'll focus on like the Gia Farrah stuff, the continuation of that. But outside of that, Liana, anything to make of Monique and Farrah's pitches to Valentina and Monet? I'll be blunt here. Did you think that there was a chance Monique was going to go home considering the pitches these two were giving?
I mean, honestly, not really. I think also the fact that Monique was just in the top has to factor in. Like, I know that they've talked in previous seasons about what the judging criteria is, but I was like, there is no way you're going to send home somebody who was just in the top and somebody who was just in the bottom, who is now in the bottom again. You know, like, I just didn't think that there was any way that Monique was going to go home.
Actually, I had, you know, watched this episode back because I taped it because I slept through it. And once I saw that Monique was in the bottom and I was kind of pissed about that, I was like, I need to go to Twitter and find out who the fuck got sent home. I want tell me, like, if Monique gets sent home, if she gets sent home here, I'm going to be pissed. I'm going to be pissed. So once I saw it was Pheromone, I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Yeah, I think the only drama came from the fact that Valentina was like, I just made up with Farrah. Am I going to, you know, possibly, you know, sully this friendship immediately in sending her home? And Farrah admits, like, you know, if I go home, it's going to take me a little while to get over it. But I think at the end of the day, Valentina is enough of a competitor that I don't think she would necessarily, you know, I don't think it's necessarily villainous for her to send Farrah home here at the moment, because she clearly was struggling with the All-Stars format.
Yeah, I agree. But the other thing, too, I wanted to say that RuPaul knows what she's doing. She loves the juxtaposition of having two queens from the same season being, talking with each other in Farrah and Valentina, and also two other queens who are on the same season also being at the mercy of each other in terms of Monet and Monique. Like, you know, if one of them wins, they're either going to have to send home their friend or not. And everybody expected that Farrah was going to be the one to be sent home. And I know Monique was like, Monet, you need to win this, you know, but I never really thought there was a universe where she was going to go home, but I do like the juxtaposition of two season 10 queens, you know, being there. And I guess it would be like two season 9 queens being there and being at the mercy of each other.
So let's get into Gia versus Farrah part 2, where Gia decides that as Monet is talking with Farrah, she needs to get up and say something. She's Gia Gunn and she has something to say. So she... in the middle of Farrah pleading for her life in Drag Race, maybe in a futile attempt, but still pleading her life, stops the conversation to say, look, I'm sorry that I, you know, possibly caused your team to fail because of the way I got into Farrah's head. And Farrah's commentary during her confessional says it all. She is steaming on the inside, similar to what you were saying before with Monique, Brent, just saying on the inside, bitch, shut up and get out of here, please, while I'm begging for my life.
Yeah, exactly. This is the part where I was like, Gia, you're a little too much. Like, everything up until now, I had liked Gia Gunn. I thought she was fun. She's a fun villain. She's stirring the pot. She's being shady. We know why she's there. But here I was like, seriously, she's about to be sent home. Like, whoever wins this lip sync, we know Farrah is almost 99.9% sure going to go home. So, and that's what Monique said. And I identify with her when she's like, the problem with being in the bottom is that you're powerless. Like, you can't fight for yourself. You have to have somebody else fight for you. And I thought it was really bad form for Gia to basically come over there and kick dirt on her. I know that she said that she was trying to apologize, but that's not what was going on. She wanted a little bit of screen time, and she was going to use pheromone to get it.
Well, and doing it while Farrah is trying to plead her case.
Yeah, like, she could do it while they're walking. She didn't need to do it now.
Right, exactly. Like, I'm going to step in the middle of the one opportunity you have to potentially try to advocate for, you know, the opportunity to stay. And I'm going to jump in and I'm going to, quote unquote, apologize for my behavior. It was funny.
Yeah, what do you make of, you know, Gia sort of insisting that, like, she wants to make things right before Farrah goes? Do you think there's legitimacy to that? Because we have seen things where people are like... Yeah, you don't think so?
No. She wanted, like, this. She's using this to get airtime. It feels like, this feels like Alyssa and Coco Montrese all over again. But they did it so much better. Like, seriously, it was so forced. There's no part of me. Like, she's apologizing for, like, causing maybe Farrah to be off her game and be in the bottom two. But that's what she did. That's the whole point of her going over to Farrah in the first place, was saying, what's going on, Monique? Who's the weak link on your team? Oh, it's Farrah Moan? Is it Farrah Moan? Okay. Well, Farrah, they say you're the weakest link on your team. Like, I mean, like, what the fuck was your point, Gia?
She said she was doing it to, make up. Too. Like, that was when I was like, oh, okay, this is fake. Nope.
If you're going to be a villain, own your shit.
I'm going to build a bridge to our friendship by insulting you to start our conversation.
You know, it never changes. No matter what reality show I'm covering, I just want people to own their shit. Like, if you're going to be a villain, you know what? I'm going to go out there. I'm going to stir the pot, bitch. That's what I'm doing. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to go out there and give her a piece of my mind. That's what she should have said. You know what? She's about to go home and I don't want her to go home without me letting her know what I think. That's what I need. If she'd have said that, I'd have been like, okay, bitch, I'm here for you. But going over there and giving some fake apology and acting like you care about her, that's weak sauce, girl. Please. Girl, bye.
Well, let's move on to something a bit more positive. Let's go to the lip sync, because good God, Valentina. I mean, this was
talk about a blowout. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I will say there were a couple moments where, you know, Monet got a laugh for, I think, gesturing to her coochie coo, as Valentina put it when talking about I'm so into you. But man, I mean, the camera, the edit, all eyes were on Valentina, because she, you know, I think if people are making the, I would say, valid argument that, you know, lip sync for your legacy does not have as many stakes as lip sync for your life and may produce maybe some subpar circumstances in comparison. A detractor can point to this lip sync and say, you know, there's an exception there. Granted, I feel like Valentina was sort of lip syncing with an ulterior motive, and that it was less so about winning $10,000 and more so about just redeeming herself as a lip syncer to the world. But whatever the motive may be, she killed it. Liana, what'd you feel about this lip sync?
Oh, yeah. It was so much fun to watch Valentina. I mean, she definitely killed it. I think if Monet hadn't had that reveal, there would have been no screen time for Monet. She should have fabricated her own storyline by getting into a fight with someone during that lip sync, because the eyes, all camera lenses were on Valentina. And I mean, understandably so. Just watching her move is always such a pleasure. And unsurprised that she ended up winning.
This reminded me of Dita Ritz and the Princess when they were doing the Natalie Cole song.
This will be, I believe, yeah.
This will be, yeah. This was one of those times where, like, there was no contest, and we're not, you know what? The editors, we're not even going to pretend that it's a contest. We're just going to focus on Valentina. Well, yeah, Monet got a couple laughs. Sure, girl, fine. But this was one of the times where Monet was just totally out lip synced and outperformed by Valentina. And I will say that part of it was the song. This was a sexy, fun song. This was something where, you know, like, you're gonna live in your femininity. And I don't think that Monet is necessarily great about that. Like, when she tried to get down onto the runway and show off a little bit of sensuality, she looks really awkward.
Yeah.
Like, she looked like I would look if I got down on the runway. She looked like a guy, if I'm being honest. She looked like a guy getting down on the runway and trying to look sexy as a girl. It did not work for me whatsoever, but Valentina, on the other hand, was stunning. Everything up. She just, like, all... Like, the, okay, I started the podcast with figure skating, and I'll end it with this. Like, all of the 6.0s in the world for Valentina, for artistic components. She was great, 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 and I was living for it.
I was just obsessed with when Monet does go into that jump split, but Valentina is just twirling like a whirling dervish.
Yes!
And she's spotting. Like, this isn't just spinning for no reason. She is spotting so that when she gets out of it, she can just jump into... Basically, she's pulling out every move in her arsenal, just constantly moving for about a minute and a half. I did notice that this lip sync seemed much longer than ones we've gotten in the past. This feels like a two and a half minute cut rather than 90 seconds.
I agree. There were a couple times where I thought it was over and then it kept going. And it was like, it was almost like the editors were like, you know what? This is really, really great content and we want to show it to you. Like, we want to show you Valentina just coming out here and just slaying the house down. And that's what she did.
Oh my God. Valentina would be really great in one of those competitions where they have to spin around. They should do that for a mini challenge.
Oh my God. Now look, were there words that were perfect? Not necessarily. I think there was one moment where if you look at a shot where Valentina's looking over her shoulder in one of the initial verses, there's definitely some words that are missed there. But Monet misses words as well. I think, you know, it was a bit of a complicated song and it was a longer song. And to your point, Brent, maybe we saw more of the uncut version, as it were. But Valentina made a meal out of this. Not to say that Monet did not, but I think it was more snack-worthy than a full dinner we got with Valentina.
I will give credit to Monet on this. I think she knew she was beat like 40 seconds into it, and she started looking at Valentina like, how are you moving like that? Like,
yeah,
like, how are you performing like that? What is going on over here? Like, that, like, girl, I just, like, I stan you so much. That's what I felt like I was getting from Monet exchange.
So we move into Valentina's win here. She gets the $10,000. The applause does not get piped in once more. She decides, I mean, as soon as you hear her say, she does not pull a Shangela and do a pivot as to who she's eliminating. She says, I feel like when you hear, you know, I'm getting rid of someone who had the chance to prove themselves, and I hope that this is not, you know, the end of my relationship with them. You had to feel it was pheromone. Farrah seems, you know, pretty congenial about Valentina specifically, but again, fantastic way to go out. Farrah approaches.
You don't love me.
Farrah quotes, I don't love you, in jest to Valentina in reference to her line at the reunion. But when she approaches Gia Gunn, she says, oh, you don't actually love me, and gets the last word and walks away. I lived for it.
Lived for it, Mike. We lived for it.
Oh, I think Farrah redeemed herself. Like, I was really happy. I am sure, I don't know if we'll get into the, you know, is the reputation higher, the same, or lower? I mean, I, even though she
was
out,
talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Yeah, thumbs up, thumbs down, or no change on Farrah Moan as a Drag Race performer from her second instance. Liana, I'm assuming that you're saying thumbs up then?
Yeah, I think I would say thumbs up. I mean, did she come in and exceed expectations? No. Was she still Farrah? Yes. But I think her interactions with Gia, I think, really put her, I think, more favorably of her now. And I think that that will translate to other fans as well.
Yeah, I would say slightly up as well. I think two things happened. Number one, she better thank her lucky stars that Gia Gunn was there to make her look better. Because, like, I felt more drawn to Farrah Moan because of what Gia Gunn was doing. Also, the fact that she handled herself in such a professional manner. I was not somebody who was very thrilled with how she acted at the season 9 reunion, where she came at Valentina. And it seemed to me that, and maybe you can say Valentina deserved it, but it seemed to me that Farrah's intent in that instance was to really undermine Valentina as much as possible and throw as much, like, drive her over the bus and then some. And I didn't like that. It wasn't a good look for Valentina for me, because it felt like messy. It's like when Taryn and I get into an argument and the people who are watching the podcast are like, this is really uncomfortable right now, even though it's not uncomfortable for us, but they feel it's uncomfortable. I feel like that's what that season 9 reunion felt like to me. So given that she was able to handle herself in such a professional manner this time, I feel like it's definitely signs pointing up.
Yeah, I mean, I think that in terms of, like, you know, her, whether she was showing off more talents, maybe not necessarily so, but I feel like we in the community just sort of, like, looked at her coming in as, okay, interesting that Farrah Moan's there as a quote-unquote all-star, since she's sort of known for one thing, her looks and her sexiness, her vivaciousness, as it were. And she was able to maintain that level, and I think that maybe not necessarily did she show off any, like, big talents she had that we didn't necessarily see before, like your Tatianas of the world. But I think that she showed from a personality perspective that maybe she had more than we thought. She was known as, you know, the crying girl. And she had a bit of a bite during the season 9 reunion, but I think she showed in this episode in particular that she does have that fight that Monique saw in her, that she has the ability to stand up for herself, talk back a bit when she feels beaten down. And I admire her for that. So I think I'm going to give her a thumbs up by default. I'm happy that we saw at least more of Farrah Moan's personality, whether, you know, it was through Drag Race or through another form. I'm happy to see that, you know, she's not really known as the basically only the one emotion. She's a complicated person in a myriad of ways, and Drag Race All-Stars showed that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so as Brent alluded to, next week, Snatch Game of Love. It looks like, of course, we're getting some drama going on, and of course it's around Gia. It seems like, if I'm doing some context clues, Gia and Trinity are feuding over playing the same character. It'll be really interesting to see who comes out victorious there.
Before we know what's going to happen, I really hope that Trinity Taylor just decides, you know what, I'm going to do whatever I want, and if you do the same character, then let's throw it down, bitch. Let's see who does it better. Like, there can be two, you know, B. Arthurs on the panel, or whatever, whoever they're going to be, you know, like...
Could you imagine the two of them are feuding over being B. Arthur?
I know, right? Sorry, that was the only celebrity I could come up with. What do you want from me? I'm gay.
Well, that's what I would love to see, is, like, what is the celebrity that is the intersection of someone who Gia and Trinity would pick? That's what I want to see. I really hope they are feuding over the same celebrity. Maybe it is B. Arthur.
Well, it's going to be interesting because I believe this is the first Drag Race All-Star season where a Snatch Game winner is not in the competition. And I honestly can't remember. Like, I feel like Manila did well when she was Imelda Marcos. You know, Naomi landed in the bottom during her Snatch Game when she was New York. Gia went home on Snatch Game for being the most boring Kim Kardashian in the world. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see who redeems themselves, who falls from the top to the bottom, and vice versa. It's a second chance to really prove yourselves in the Snatch Game of Love. Anything else either one of you two want to talk about episode two before we wrap this up and move into episode three, which will be the last episode of Drag Race aired in 2018?
Wow. Yeah, I don't know. I think this was a fun episode. I mean, it was a little predictable with Farrah going home. A little bit of unpredictability with Monique being in the bottom. I did not expect that after her being so strong last week. I take Liana's point that RuPaul may be a little pissed with her. And so far as the wig flying off again and there being nothing underneath. And I do enjoy the fact that they had Latrice Royale being like, bitch, brown cow stunning, not so much. If you take your wig off and there's not something else under there, you know you've done something bad. She's like, and this isn't the second time. This is the second time this has happened to her. Like, she should know better. And I like the fact that they included that in. Basically, here's the thing. The editors and the show are giving you big red blinking lights to all future contestants and any all-stars that come back on RuPaul's Drag Race. Don't take your damn wig off. RuPaul hates that, and so do we. Don't do it.
I think the only other thing that I have to say is Farrah trying to kiss the mirror on her mirror message, where she's like jumping up and she can't do it. So cute. So Farrah. And I just wanted to mention it before we wrap up.
Yeah, we'll see in the opening minutes of next week if she was able to successfully plant a kiss on it, or if it just sort of ended up smudging with her trying to, you know, make her way to the mirror. We'll see next week. Let's go around the horn as per usual. If you want to give out your social media handle and anything you have been working on in terms of podcasts in the past week or so. Liana, let's start with you.
So you can find me on social media. I'm at Liana Boras, LianaBoraas. And Mike and I just recorded the final episode of the RHAP B&B for season 37 of Survivor. So we had amazing guest Eric Stein on the podcast, where it's like 3 hours. It's a lot, but it's so much fun. And if you are looking for more Survivor coverage, definitely check it out. I think it just got dropped. It's amazing.
And Brent, I'm sorry to say that Eric has already taken your role in the upcoming RHAP musical that we have started to produce. So,
I'm very excited about that. You can find me at One Lucky Gay. That's one spelled out, O-N-E, across all social media platforms, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. And I'm usually on Twitter. I'm not on Instagram and Snapchat so much, but I get onto all three. And come read me for filth. We didn't have anybody read us this week, so I'm hoping that we get somebody to read us. And by the way, if you're going to do it well.
And also, I know, Brent, speaking of another 3-hour podcast, you spent a few hours getting together with Melissa and Taryn to talk through Big Brother in 2018 in a nutshell, right?
Yeah, we did our end of the year Big Brother podcast. It was a long one. In fact, longer than I thought it was going to be. It was a 3-hour podcast, and we had a great time talking about all the shade of Big Brother. There were some things that I had forgotten about Celebrity Big Brother and Big Brother Canada, but this was a truly a an up year for Big Brother in terms of what we got with Big Brother 20, Big Brother Canada 6, and Celebrity Big Brother. Everything, everybody was here to play. They wanted the money. Like, there were a few people that I had problems with. And as I pointed out on that podcast, it's not often that I get into fights with social media with contestants. And yet this happened twice this season. So I don't expect that it will happen for the new year in 2019. But you never know with me. I'm a little messy.
Yeah, I'm really excited to listen to that because I totally agree that I think that Big Brother in particular had a very strong 2018 across all franchises. And I'm excited to especially revisit Celebrity Big Brother in anticipation of Celebrity Big Brother 2 to just sort of revisit all the craziness that happened there. You can always follow me at @AmMikeBloomType. Liana mentioned the B&B finale. I'll also be recording a podcast on this week's episode of Top Chef with Brooke Williamson, not only a frequent guest and winner of Top Chef, but also someone who was there to attend the festivities of that past episode. So look out for that. Also putting out maybe a couple of other surprise podcasts in the next week or so as we welcome in the holiday season. Well, happy holidays to you all. I hope you have a very nice week as we prepare for the end of 2018. We'll be back next week to cover the Snatch Game of Love and who flies and who crashes and burns from that as another queen will go home. Thank you all so much for listening. For now, you may sashay away. Bye!